Oh dear. Well, where do we begin? Well, I suppose the first thing to say is welcome to the Caddisfaction inaugural podcast. Oh, this is going to be so good. Why the hell are we doing this? I was chatting with Dave. We were thinking about all these wonderful CAD things I do, and I find there's so many mediums to share stuff now, but nobody really talks about the stuff behind the actual program. This is going to be the most articulate podcast in the world.
Catch it, draw it, make it, change it, fix it, make it, save it, share it. Caddisfaction. This is the Caddisfaction podcast. Caddisfaction.
Hello and welcome to the Caddisfaction podcast. You are here with me, Ollie Cooper, and my good friend Dave Armstrong, who is going to be helping me through this podcast process. Today is the inaugural episode where we're going to be discovering the good, the bad, and the ugly. Can't resist that phrase. About how we're going to do this. And hopefully you'll discover a little bit about us and why we started this and why we are doing this. So Dave has rightly reminded me that I am awful at talking about myself. Sometimes you just need to be poked out of your corner. And Dave's going to be that guy for me. And I deeply appreciate and love him for it, because I would quite happily sit in that corner in my drafting office and keep myself to myself and deliver drawings, but sometimes it's nice to share that knowledge through other means than just teaching or YouTube videos or chatting to your local friends. It's nice to go a bit further afield, and I think certainly during this lockdown that's something I wanted to do more and more.
Okay, so hi, I'm Dave, and I'm Ollie's crutch. For the next 25 minutes, anyway. And I will be poking to find out what I can about Ollie. Ollie and I came together about a year ago. I'm based in Dubai, and Ollie is has his business in the UK, and we worked on a number of projects that were sort of based in Dubai, with Ollie coming out and doing some fantastic drawing work for us. And I think it's fair to say that over the time I've got to know him, that I've just been sort of quietly fascinated by what he does and how he takes an idea that is either on paper or in someone's head as a bit of a wacky idea and just fleshes it out and sort of draws the lines around the idea and makes it into something. And I'm very aware that for the CADing community, this is what a lot of you guys will be doing on a day-to-day basis. But for me, seeing these things come to life was hands-on heart, absolutely epic. And I've really enjoyed it. So as I mentioned, Ollie's got a cracking business in the UK. Ollie, just tell the people a little bit about sort of what you do and how that all came together.
I suppose the easiest way to explain it is to go through the whole story. I trained in technical and production management at the Central School of Speech and Drama. So I am a theatre-based draftsman. So we're quite niche in our nature. I then went through years of crewing at various venues, Roundhouse, Globe, Young Vic. And after a while, I settled, becoming deputy technical manager at the Hampstead Theatre. Which after a few months I realised wasn't what I was truly passionate about, and went for a job interview at the National Theatre as a draftsman. And it was there that I kind of got deeper into the world of CAD and what it could do. And after that, I went to a scenery company for about a year and saw the commercial side, because every organisation I'd primarily worked for was charitable, and a lot of theatre institutions are outside the West End in the UK. And I just found myself wanting to do more and explore more. When you get into that kind of institutionalized company, you stick to your road. You don't really go out and do the really interesting stuff. And as a draftsman, I was like, what's next? How can I develop? Are we looking at VR? Are we looking at AR? Are we just carrying on as normal? And I ended up actually starting my own company, and that's where I learned a lot, made a lot of mistakes along the way. I made some great friends, I made some enemies, and that's where I found the most interesting questions. And even now, we're in our second year, the good questions come up, and actually the challenges come up. Dave was talking about a job when we met last year, and that was actually one of the most interesting projects I've ever worked on. So to be working in an airport with a completely different set of stakeholders and challenges was really interesting, because I very rarely cross into that kind of architectural level of drawing detail, or it's a different style of detail. And I think particularly on the engineering side, although that's relatively known to me, the level of backing on that engineering, so I had to use a particular company for the engineering sign-off of this project, and their first statement to me was, we don't sign off anything under an M16. Now for me, theatre, what, M16? M12? M12's a bad day for me. And M8's like, I'm pushing my luck. But to have someone outright come and say, don't present us with anything less than an M16 connection in this, was quite a like, oh, okay, that happened. And that's not, different world. I look at building sites. In fact, I'm just in, I live in London, and there's a new development just being built behind where my studio is. And, watching them, completely different world compared to Theatre Land. But when I look at the drawings, we all speak the same language. It's just different styles. So yeah, here I am, and I'm just kind of reaching out, having just done my first AU, AU being Autodesk University, which this year, of course, was online with everything going on. That was, my first opportunity. Like, I know a lot of the guys did some of the teaching, which has been great. But yeah, it's been nice to actually see a lot more of AU than I probably would have done had I gone to Vegas. Keep dreaming of Vegas, of course, because who doesn't want to go to Vegas? It's just like, unfortunately, up until now, it would have been, oh, the company's sending me to Vegas. And it's like, yeah, that's nice. Now I'd just be sending myself to Vegas. So I can't exactly just cheat. I can't go, oh, yeah, can I stay here? Can I get these tickets?
It doesn't have the same glass when you're picking up the tab, does it?
No, it really doesn't. It's kind of like, oh, can I justify it this year? And when it's someone else, it's like, yeah, absolutely, you can justify that. So, you're absolutely right. It doesn't have the same gloss.
So we're putting together a series of podcasts. Or you, through OCT, are putting together a series of podcasts. Obviously, I'll do all the little joiny bits in the background to make sure that people can download them. But over the series, obviously, there's a plan to link this in with your YouTube channel. But what can we expect in terms of episodes and themes that are coming up over the next couple of weeks and months?
Well, that's a good one. I've sat down and thought about this. I kind of want to do an initial kind of series. And I think I've definitely locked down the first 6 episodes of what I want to do. Obviously, the first being the introduction to the podcast, and hopefully give you a little bit of idea what we're going to be chatting about, and hopefully entice you to the next one. From here, I've got a good friend of mine, Sarah, who came into the industry as an apprentice. Now, I came from the university background and then did what is considered the more traditional work through, be on the ground with the boys, which again is controversial these days, depending on where you stand, draft person, not draftsman. And so I want to talk about the two different paths into my industry, I suppose, specifically for now, and talk about the differences between coming in as an apprentice and coming in as someone who's been on the tools, because there's a lot of old fashioned opinions there. And particularly Sarah, being a woman, it's slightly harder, and it shouldn't be. And I know that she faced some challenges, and I think it would be good to discuss those and really open the doors on that, because these are big issues and they shouldn't be big issues. And while I'll openly admit part of me wants that traditional, I like knowing that someone's been on the tools. I never ask someone to build something that I couldn't. If I draw it, I know I can probably build it that way. I'll always ask for advice, don't get me wrong, but coming in as apprentice, you may not have had that 5-6 years down in the metal workshop or down in the wood workshop to really hone your skills and understand if you're asking someone to do a series of half laps like 100 times, that's a lot of work. And actually, maybe you should be CNCing it rather than doing it by hand. So I think that's going to be a really good chat. Then I want to talk about everyone's favorite subject, 2020. I've got a good friend over in America who is a professor of engineering, and he's agreed to chat with me about how his term's gone with his engineering students, because they were due to come across here in April. And we were going to meet up and talk about theatre engineering. So he reached out to me, So really nice contact that I've made pre-lockdown, and he's kept in touch during lockdown. He's actually a SolidWorks user. I should mention I'm an Autodesk user. So it's a really good conversation between us, because he's like, oh, we're facing these challenges with licensing and trying to teach the students away. And I'm like, oh, that's really interesting, because Autodesk does it this way. So it's been a good conversation. So I think that could be a good chat about the virtual world, from teaching remotely to drawing remotely, and actually still delivering the quality of projects that everyone still expects, because that is a challenge.
One of the things that we found when we worked together was that, and I think you're planning to cover this, is knowing the workshop. That was a very important area, because when we were working on the project here in Dubai, I think there was a little bit of a shock towards the end when we realized some of the things that could be delivered and some of the things that couldn't be delivered, and also some of the quality that was coming out occasionally maybe wasn't where it needed to be, and then other things the workshop could excel at, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was contemplating switching that around. I've got the kind of tools in the bag, which is kind of what's in my everyday bag, which was just going to be kind of an open session to chat. That might tie quite nicely. And then knowing the scenic workshop was going to be an element in itself. They may actually quite nicely intertwine. But absolutely right. Depending on where you're working to what the workshop can do, and actually coming out there, it's very rare, you know, my client, you invited me out there, and that's not always possible. And actually coming to have a look at a workshop and be asked an opinion on what do I think, and finding the workshop that has all the tools and processes that you need, but then you realize that maybe the workforce is to a different standard, particularly in Dubai. You face challenges that you might not normally face here. And therefore, their build method tends to be more CNC driven rather than handcraft. And that's quite interesting. And not that there's anything wrong with it, it's just a different way of thinking. And actually, when we came to the end of the project, I think one of the most interesting things was the engineer signing it off thought we were using, I don't know why you got this into, like oxyacetylene cutting to do our plate cutting, whereas we were using CNC laser, which is far cleaner, far faster. And he was like, oh, I didn't realize the laser cutting was of this quality. I would have suggested that you could have built more of this out of laser cut plate rather than tubular steel, because he insisted, you know, there was components that could have been made a lot more simply and a lot lighter. And I think that's why that visit to the workshop or that relationship for any draftsperson that is working with the manufacturer, that relationship is so important, because that can 100% change your entire project. Prime example for me is you draw a timber flat, which is a scenic element, you know, 3x1 timber frame, six mil covering of MDF. Moving that rail, which is the internal timbers, just 20 mil could conceivably completely bugger up another element of your set, where you might be resting something on that timber so it all aligns nicely, so it makes someone's life on site easier. And just by moving that, you could have a huge effect. And so, in fact, that brings me back to one of my slight detour here. It brings me back to one of the things one of my first employers taught me, was whenever you're making something, you've got to think not only of the story of what it's got to achieve, but the whole story of the piece. You can't just think about that moment in its life. What is it being made from? What is it doing? How's it going to be taken down? What's happening to it afterwards? And particularly these days, all the green initiatives, you know, we can't just think as a wasteful industry. We've got to think far more big picture than we ever have before. We can't be selfish in our view of, okay, this show's going to be amazing, it's going to run for 10 years, and then at the end of the 10 years, it's going to be an environmental disaster when we dispose of it. Yeah, there's always going to be something where, okay, we can only achieve that effect this way. But I think we've got to weigh that up. What's the real cost of that? It's not financial, it's environmental, it's social. And I think we have a greater responsibility to that, for sure.
It's quite interesting you talk about the journey. I'm 100% with you on the life cycle or the future, but the journey of actually getting the product to site, that was something we also learned some very interesting lessons on.
Yeah, oh God. We could, you see, you could start me on this and we could last for hours just on this subject, because it's, it's tricky, because sneak peek, not every door is built the same size, as we know. And particularly, And places where you, you know, oh, we'd like to do a job here. Mm-hmm. Yep, that's great. We've got a big outer door. Lovely. It's going to be really straightforward.
Yeah.
Go through the second door. The second door is about a fifth of the size. And they just go, oh, we didn't think that would be a problem.
Yes. Well, it was. So project-wise, we've worked on and off on different things for a year, and we've got a very good relationship where I've often come back to you after a project and said, we want to change this, or this needs to be modified for X, Y, and Z reason. And we've always sort of touched base. I think one of the qualities, just for the listener to understand, is Ollie's got an amazing smile on his face. And that stays there, and it stayed there throughout the lockdown period. And I think it's been very challenging for him, and I'm sure across the community it's been very challenging as well when there hasn't been as much work in the market and many things going on. But in terms of your office now, what else have you got that you that you can share and sort of keep us up to date with on progress as we move through?
I've got to start by saying I've been, as hard as it's been, I have been extremely lucky. I'm so grateful to a lot of my clients. I'm not sure if they'd want me to name them, but some of the MDs of companies have been calling me up and just going, hi, how you doing? I just want to check you're okay. You know, we sent you an email that might have been come across harsh, but we spent a long time trying to type it up, basically saying we're not going to be using freelancers for the foreseeable future because we've got to look internally. Obviously, if there's something specialist that you can do for us, we'll obviously reach out, which has been lovely. You know, that kind of support and just those calls has meant the world. And, you know, people like yourself calling every so often just to see how I'm doing. That's the difference between what I feel is surviving. Like, I don't think I would have made this through that without that, because this guy's lonely.
With the work that you do, Ollie, and the way that you've looked after people, you know, you've always gone the extra mile. You've gone out of your way to have a good relationship. If something's not right, you put it right fast. And those are, in any business, those are the fundamental things that make someone reliable, that make them part of a family, even if they're a freelancer. People have still cared and people have still wanted to reach out to you, even if there's nothing on, because, you know, you are a good guy. And, you know, as people get to know you through the podcast series and you talk to your peers in the industry, I think they'll understand more about you and understand that the reasons why you've maintained a good profile and you've built that trust and built that loyalty over time.
Yeah, thank you. But yeah, first to say, I've made mistakes. You know, there's clients that I've let down. And I feel awful to this day. You know, that's worth saying. You can't, I think maybe when I first started this business, I was naive that I could be everything. I don't want to say everything to everyone. You always want the best for your clients. And, you know, you always, and particularly in this industry, you become friends with them because you spend so much time. You know, you think about normal industries where you're maybe doing 8-hour, 9-hour day at most. You know, I'm thinking building industry. I might be making some terrible assumptions here. So apologies if anyone from the building industry is listening to this going, oh, come on, I just did 18 hours. You don't know what you're talking about. I don't, and that's why I want to talk to you guys. So if you're listening to this and want to talk, let me know, because I'd love to know more about that side of it. But the industry, I know from the industry work we work in, like that project we did in Dubai this time last year. Jesus, that's a thought. You know, I didn't sleep for 3 days. And you bond over that. That's a bonding thing. And you can't walk away from a relationship like that and not be close. And it's a blessing and a curse. Or scarred. I have no scars from that job. There's no cuts that have remained. There was bloodshed, but it's healed. It's not completely damaged me. But yeah, I find that relationship's really key to what you do. And some people you just really click with, and projects help you do that. We're all in it to deliver something, and we all want to deliver something absolutely incredible. But just coming back to what you were asking, what I've been doing in lockdown, I did a couple of online Zooms for the community. So Society of British Theatre Designers, I posted on their Facebook page, and I put it on the OC Theatrical Facebook page. I just wanted to share some, talk to people, because it's tough when you're in a business by yourself. So I did a couple of online Zooms, a couple of 8-hour days, just showing, drawing a model box and just going through my process and what my choices are on that. And then I did a back to basics kind of, if you've never seen CAD before, let's take you through that. People have reached out to me after that and chatted to me and just gone, oh, could you offer some advice on this? And actually drummed up some lockdown business through training, which has been great. And then the real big one that came along was Six the Musical. Sarah, who's done quite a bit of work with me and what used to work with me back at the National, she and I did the Broadway design drawing. They're doing the show in the Lyric in London. And they reached out and said, would you be interested in doing it again? And that was amazing. And actually a really, really good example of remote working, because the scenic builder was in York. We were here. We were in not a lockdown.
Just York.
Just York, not New York. But it could have been New York. You know, I don't think when you're doing that kind of level of remote work, any distance when you can't go there.
Yeah.
You know, York is four or five hour drive or ride. And, you know, my best friend lives up there. I go up there quite regularly when I can to go and see him. And it's still a long journey, but it might as well have been New York with lockdown.
Yeah.
Although businesses were operating to a certain extent because they can't not operate. You can't operate a scenery building company. If you can't go build scenery, you can't do that in your back garden. They set up systems to allow them to continue working during tier three. I'm not even going to go into the tier system, but whatever the tier system is here, you're allowed to go to work, but you're not allowed to meet people outside. So I was like, okay, well, let's avoid that journey, but let's have that conversation. So, you know, it's tools, video calling tools, that enable us to do that. And it's finding a system that works for every stakeholder. I almost jokingly said, should we get one of those, do you remember the iPads on the Segways? Yes. So I could walk around the workshop on one of those every so often. You know, hi guys, just checking in. How you going? And just walk up behind them with this iPad. Why are you doing this to us? It's like, because it's fun. I must admit, that is, if this continues, that is, that option of buying one of those is getting more and more tempting.
That is brilliant.
Was it remote presence?
We might need one of those from my garage, actually. That's a really good shot.
That could work. Well, we haven't even mentioned your project, so we should. Yeah, I think it's fair to say Dave is a little bit of a cockpit fan. He's an aircraft fan, let's say. So we are designing a 777 cockpit to go in your garage. I was going to go properly American. Garage. Bad accents here. Let's not go there. So we've designed the base. We've done a curved back projection wall, 220 degrees, 8 foot high. And that's going to have a tri-projector set up on it. Mm. And we've built the floor. And it's worth noting that we've done this all remote. Dave isn't a carpenter.
No.
I think it's fair to say. And he's done incredibly well to build a curved wall. And not only has he built a curved wall, you can see his face, he built it from scraps. Like,
yeah.
and again, it's not to say you should, times are tough. And he have found material from shows and projects that we've done over the last year that were available and were going to go to bins. And instead of throwing those items in bin, and the reason they were going to bins, I should say, is because they're chemically treated for fireproofing because they're in the airport. So they would have gone to landfill. There was no choice on that. So, you know, just taking the time to rip apart those frames and cut them into curves and then make this wall, actually a bloody impressive wall. I've got to say it. You did incredibly well.
Yeah, I think when you come with your measuring apparatus and detect that it's slightly off somewhere, I think there'll be a quiet word in my ear. But no, it's good. it initially was going to be one of those ones where you do it badly, then show it to an expert, and they say, "Oh, just get out of the way." But it didn't go that way.
Yeah, I was kept away for a long time. No, it does. It genuinely, it looks good, and yes. Even the framing looks solid. But I think most impressively, that new floor structure, because again, some steel frames that were going to be ditched, although steel frames can be recycled to a relative, you were able to quickly grab those, take a tiny amount off them, and it's worked out as a perfect floor for the project.
Yeah.
And just, I think for you, just learning those skills and gaining an appreciation for what the guys do in the workshop I should explain, Dave is a very good project manager. And often, caution as I say this, some project managers have hands-on experience and they don't mind getting their hands dirty, but a lot do steer clear and sometimes don't always realize what they're asking. And I think it's good for, even I do, it's good to go back to those roots of getting your hands dirty and getting involved with the guys and girls on the floor. Because when you ask something that's really, what was it I asked? Like climbing under a stage to go and clean out a tank, you know, and it's 600 mil off the floor and you've got to crawl on your hands and knees. And if you're not willing to do it, you know, and you're asking these guys to, I think there's something, you know, I always think project managers should have the ability to get their hands dirty. Maybe that's just my old school opinion. I'm not saying necessarily the best person to do it. I just think they should be willing to do it.
When you're massively under the pump, you need every set of arms and legs that can really get their hands on it and get the job done. And that's what it's about. And that's where that bonding happens. When you've got people that are great at it, that are maybe firing at 85% because they've been on the project for too long, and you've got fresh energy coming in, and they see the leaders getting involved. And I think it unites a team, it creates a bond, and it gets the job done. That's what it's about. But there's no point in being, I just don't believe in leading projects. I think you've got to be willing to do anything to get it done. You don't have to be as good as the people underneath you to get it done, but you have to be willing to put yourself in the place of anyone in that team and try your best. And if you do that, you know, I remember on one of our very late night shifts when we had an issue with metalwork, you showed me the proper way to hold an angle grinder. You know, and I was jumping from an Excel spreadsheet to an angle grinder and back again.
Yeah, you were, and you did it well.
Fueled by KFC.
So much Coke, is unreal. Coca-Cola, I should be clear on that. I should be very clear on that, particularly in that country.
Yes.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Purely sugar-fired there.
But yeah, I mean, the 777 project is a fun one. I'm sure there's times when you'll be able to reference it. You're going to do some videos in the YouTube channel as well, which I think people will be able to dive into. So in the interest of confidentiality, I've no issues with you sharing that with anybody.
Dave made a square thing again. I got to make it round.
Amazing. Cool. So that's just, I think that's a little bit about you and what you want to do. I hope I've been a good, what did you say? A good crotch and poke.
Good crotch. Oh, all the best terms on this podcast. It's only going to get better. You know, I feel as if we should have some sort of like CAD puns, you know. We should just be like, so from the offset, we're just going to put the construction lines out for this podcast. You know,
there's an array of ones that we could use.
Whee! Now you're leading me down the path.
Amazing. Cool. So if people want to catch up with you on social channels and see what you're doing, learn a bit more about what you're doing, where can they find you?
So Instagram is oct.ltd. We're on Twitter at octheatrical. And Facebook is OC Theatrical. We've managed to maintain our name on pretty much every social media, which is pretty good going. Come find us. Instagram tends to be any projects we can share a bit more openly, pictures of what we're up to. Twitter, we're getting better at, so bear with us. We'll work on that. It's like, one social media. What I love about it is one of the things I love about Instagram. You can do all of them at the same time. A lot to keep up with sometimes. And then Facebook, again, kind of just reflects what we're up to, what crazy thoughts I'm having. I think at the moment I've posted an idea of doing another live stream where people can ask questions about my modeling process while I do a design drawing. So stuff like that comes up, and there's a group within that for CAD questions. And I've said to everyone, it's an open community where everyone can just ask. Doesn't matter how stupid. It goes back to, I'm going to name him because he's a good man, Mr. Salter, wherever you are, at my old school, who was my French teacher. I didn't learn French. I'm going to be open and honest about that, because I did not listen to this piece of advice. And it's only since being at university that I've listened to this. There are no stupid questions. There are only silent idiots. And it is so important, no matter where you are in life, whatever you're doing, to remember that, because if you don't ask the question, you'll never know the answer. And actually, it could have been a really, really interesting answer. So definitely ask the questions and get in touch, because I like sharing stuff. You know, I don't mind sharing. I don't believe in this kind of, I'm going to keep all the secrets so I can always know everything and everyone has to come to me. I'd rather share it and really challenge the preconceptions of everything that we do.
You did mention the YouTube channel in there, didn't you?
Oh, I didn't. No. So YouTube, again, maintaining the name OC Theatrical. If you search that, of course, algorithms keep us relatively hidden, but do search us. And on there, in fact, if you go to OC Theatrical website, www.octheatrical.co.uk or .com, there's an online store, obviously, with all our stuff. We do ship internationally. But within that is our free Zero to Drawing, and that has a direct link to our YouTube, and you can download all the training documents. So if you can't find us, you can definitely find us there. And there, oh, what am I saying? There's definitely a link on the website. So you can also find us through the website. Yeah, lots of ways to find us, and hopefully this will be one more.
I probably won't be on the next one. I'll be behind the scenes making it appear in your iTunes and in anywhere else that you find a podcast. Ollie, I wish you the best moving forward. Have some fun. And next week's episode is going to be, or the next episode when you get around to recording it, will be with Sarah. Is that right?
Yeah, apprenticeships versus university, and then probably building into, I might see if we can get another one. I might try and do a three-way. Dave's holding his head in his hands going, why are you doing this to me? You're making this too easy. I might see if I can get someone who's gone the classic route of working the workshop straight through to becoming a draftsman and not actually doing an apprenticeship or university. So then we've got three different strands in three different eras. Again, a story for another time, and definitely in the next podcast. When you're looking for a job, what do you search?
Yeah, that's a good one, actually.
It actually makes a huge and unbelievable difference. I might even try and find some stats and bring those in, because that'd be really interesting.
Cool.
Thanks for joining us. Catch you on the next one.
This is the Caddis Action Podcast. Caddis Action.